Blog Talk Radio.
Secret place of the Most High God shall abide in His grace. He that walketh through the valley of death shall in no wise be entangled. By God's hand you shall be kept. So if I go into the head, He knows. If I go into the deepest depths, He knows. So no matter what may come my way, I'm covered by His blood. Even when Satan seemed to rage from His hand, I'm hidden safe. I'm in His safety, dwell in His safety. The of the Lord, I am. I dwell in the safety. Bless Your name, O God.
He is the captain.
Sometimes you just have to go to him as humble as a lamb.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. So glad you all joined us tonight. I don't know where you are in the world, but it's very cold, very wet, very slippery, very icy here in Dallas tonight. Thank you so much for taking this time to hang out with us. Tonight we're just going to slow it down. It's cold, and I have been without utilities from 8:30 this morning until 5 p.m. So tonight we're just going to slow it down. We're going to talk about, first of all, the legacy of Nelson Mandela, and then we're going to talk about some other things that have been going on in the world. But this is going to be the first time we kind of just kicked back, slowed it down, and just really talked about just whatever, not specifically any particular topic except, of course, beginning with Nelson Mandela and his death. And we want to say that what counts in life is not the mere fact that we have lived. It is what difference we have made in the lives of others that will determine the significance of the life we led. That's Nelson Mandela. We know all of South Africa and indeed the world joins us in the profound sense of loss and sadness on the death of our beloved Nelson Mandela. Our deepest sympathies and heartfelt condolences are with the Mandela family and the friends and his friends, excuse me, at this time. So tonight we want to start off talking about the man. You know, I always found his life fascinating, you know, but I think if he had not spent 27 years in prison, most of us probably would not have thought of his struggle the way we have. Two of the guys are with me tonight. We're waiting on AJ. Good evening, Khufu Kush, and good evening, Christopher Buns. How are you guys this evening?
Just fine, Kara. How are you?
Cold. It keeps it real cold.
Cold in Chicago,
and
too.
Is it cold in Chicago, too?
It's like about 20 degrees.
Wow. I think it's about 27 here, isn't it, Khufu?
Somewhere around there, 27. It's going to be 13 in the morning. Oh, wow. 24 tomorrow.
Yes. So, y'all, it's cold where all of us are tonight. And, y'all, you know, over this past couple of days, Nelson Mandela passed. And, you know, wow, to most people, that's a great loss to the world, not just South Africa, but to the world. What are you all thoughts on his passing?
I think Mandela is going to go down in history as one of the great African thinkers. One of the greatest African thinkers.
Really?
Come out of Africa, because we have people like Chikandiok and Kwame Nkrumah, and people like Robert Mugabe, you know, who are going to be on that list out there as well. Chikandiok already is on that list. And Kwame Nkrumah, who was the president of Ghana, you know, when they was free and whatnot. So Nelson Mandela is going to go down in history the same way.
Really?
Yeah.
Christopher, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that was as diverse as Nelson Mandela was, and not only that, the things that he had to go through with the 40-plus years of being in prison, basically being a political prisoner of war, being able to come out of that and then go on and forge forward for the civil rights and justice for a lot of the African people, that's almost like unheard of, because to keep that kind of motivation and keep that foresight in front of him in terms of to do what he was doing for the good of the people, I think that's also a reason that he'll go down in history. And I know we'll get into some other things later, but I think from what I have seen and that I knew of him and that I was able to research and read on him and seen him throughout the years, I think his legacy will be enduring because of those things that he did while in prison and then after being in prison as well.
You know, the phenomenal thing about him is mostly even – say what, Khufu?
I haven't said anything. My phone kind of skipping in and out a little bit, but it just started, so it should be all right. Hopefully it'll be all right out here in this weather. I'm in Grand Prairie now.
Okay. You know, one thing that was just, you know, phenomenal about his legacy is, you know, we don't even have leaders that are made up of what he was made up of. You know, I don't know of any of our leaders that would go to prison for 27 years, you know, for the cause. You know what I mean? For him to have done that, you know, believing in the fact and believing in what he believed in enough to go through that, most people would have buckled long before the 27 years.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. Yeah.
That's a long time.
Well, some people wouldn't have buckled because they would have never went. They would have done whatever they needed to do not to have to go to prison, let alone go to prison.
That's true. That is so true. And, you know, there are rumors, you know, the Internet is always full of rumors, y'all. And there are some people on the Internet are stating that, you know, first of all, you know, his life shows to be from July 18th, 1918 to December 5th, which was yesterday, 2013. And there are people, conspiracy theorists, already on the Internet saying that he died this past summer. Do y'all believe that? I mean, do you believe that he died this past summer and they kept it a secret until now?
I don't think Mandela died last summer. I mean, I doubt it. I very seriously doubt it. I do. Some of the conspiracy theories are all right, but I very much doubt that one.
I question that myself. You know, his movie came out in London yesterday, and I said, you know, surely, you know, that would not be the case. But, you know, stranger things have happened. But it's just amazing how, you know, stuff pops up the minute someone dies. But, you know, that's one of the things that I saw circulating on the Internet. And what we know about Mandela is that he became president of South Africa after winning his country's first democratic election back in 1994. You know, it's just amazing, first of all, you know, South Africa is predominantly black, but most of us know it's not really run, for the most part, by black people. It seems that, you know, white people pretty much run South Africa and the way things go over there. So it's amazing that way back in 1994 he was able to win. Don't y'all agree? What is wrong? Oh,
yeah,
are
they
you
just come out at?
Say what?
Oh.
Don't you agree that South Africa?
They just come up out of that white supremacist government, you know. They're still kind of punished, you know, in a way. So, yeah, it was probably, you know, very hard at, you know, beginning his presidency and whatnot coming out. But that was real good. You know, I'm glad Mandela stayed strong and whatnot. And also, you know, I'm talking about his wife, ex-wife, but Winnie Mandela,
yeah.
Yes, yeah. Winnie Mandela. Yeah, their sister, that she stayed very strong the whole time Mandela was in there. Stayed strong. Stayed, you know, stayed by his side.
But then after he got out, didn't they divorce? And he later married someone else?
Unfortunately, that is the case.
Yeah, I thought that was the case. And you know, they said that he was a politician, he was a philanthropist. You know, basically, I never, you know, there's some things on Wikipedia and some other places on the Internet I question because, you know, on Wikipedia it's reading that Mandela was considered a controversial figure for much of his life, denounced as a Marxist terrorist by conservatives. I never heard that about him. No? When I read that, I was like,
well,
I never heard that. Had y'all ever heard that?
Well, read a book Dr. Kwame Nkrumah wrote about the ANC organization that Mandela was a part of, and he wrote about how they was under house arrest back in the 60s, and just about the overall organization that Mandela then was part of and whatnot, they struggled during that time. And so he kind of dominated pretty well.
Okay.
But yeah, Mandela was controversial. He was very controversial.
On the ANC, didn't he?
Excuse me?
He served as president of the ANC from like 1991 to 1997.
Well, I mean, you know, this ANC organization, you know, it was back in the 60s. That's what he went to prison for, that organization. They sent a lot of their members to prison, some of them exiles and everything. You know, and that was a strong organization that was in South Africa during that time, the ANC.
And the ANC, y'all, stands for the African National Congress. And, you know, they said that he was the president. So, you know, we just wanted to touch on him tonight because, you know, we would be remiss, you know, to start a show without mentioning, you know, Nelson Mandela, his legacy, you know, what he meant to us. I mean, you know, he's a figure, even though he was president of South Africa, he's a strong power even here in the States. You know, people have mad respect for him and his life and his legacy. And so we could not start tonight's show without saying, you know, rest in peace to Mr. Mandela, and you know, may his family, you know, find peace during this time, because he's like one of those pillars that you just absolutely can't, you know, talk about Black history without, you know, his name coming up in some way. But moving on. There's been so much in the news this week. Honest to God, this has been like a crazy week. You know, we have the actor that died in the car crash. You know, did y'all want to talk about that at all? I really didn't check into that story very much. I saw it. It just seems weird. It just seems like one of those stories that there's a missing piece to it, and I never really like to report on something until it all comes together for me. And it just seems like there's a missing link as to what happened to that car and why that car burst into flames. It just seems like something's wrong. Yeah, y'all see that about?
Driving.
Huh?
Go ahead. He wasn't even driving the car. You know, it was his car from what I read reports, a new Porsche. Was it a new Porsche? No, it wasn't a new Porsche.
It was a Porsche. But somebody else was driving. His friend was driving the car, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So then, how did the car just? How did they have the accident? Is it that become clear yet?
I saw a tree. I thought they struck that little tree that was by the car. I think they struck that tree there.
Were they speeding? Has anybody come to the conclusion that they were speeding?
I'm not accused. Some of it is a sketch of details. You know, for far as we know, he lost control of the car. And I think I heard one report with three of them in the car, and that Paul was in the middle. And so he died, and another person died, but I don't think the driver died. I don't think. One of them didn't die. There were three of them in the car, but one of them didn't die.
I just found it was just, that's just one of those stories when you see it, either you believe it or not, that was Paul Walker. If you just believe it or not, it's just something about that car crash from the very beginning when the story first hit the news, it just seems like something's missing. Don't know what, but it just seems just an odd, you know, odd occurrence. I don't know. Christopher, you have anything on that one?
Well, it is odd, but some of the things that they're having trouble with is the research that they're doing. They haven't concluded, like you said, what actually happened. They have five different theories in terms of what they thought may have happened. But apparently, this was not just an ordinary car either. It was a modified racing car that cost almost $500,000. It said the oil change alone cost $900. So they're trying to look at what actually happened. Did the driver lose control? Because apparently the individual was very familiar with the vehicle, but I haven't really been able to find anything that they have definitively come to what the cause of the crash was. So it is suspicious, but they're saying the person who was driving the car was extremely experienced with the vehicle. So they're still wondering what happened.
You know, I hesitated to even bring it up because, you know, typically when stories like that come out where it just looks like there's a missing link, I really hate to report on them because it just seems like, you know, rest in peace to Paul Walker and the person who was also a passenger in the car. I just find something strange about that story. I just don't know. But also, y'all, moving on. You know, this strike happened this week with the fast food workers, and I can't say I don't, you know, I totally support them, and I absolutely did not eat at a fast food restaurant the day that they were on strike. But do you all believe that $15 an hour is excessive? Are they asking for too much and asking for a higher wage?
Well, I'm not coming on that.
Okay, go
ahead. We know Elizabeth Warren, who I was hoping was going to run for president in 2016, who apparently is not going to run as I think she's speaking on MSNBC last night or night before last. They had a clipping of her. You know, she's done the math on what the minimum wage is supposed to be based on the American economy from 1960 up until today, you know, how American companies has grown and whatnot and profited, you know, off the workers and whatnot. And so she stated that, of course, we all know, you know, if you've been following her a little bit, she stated that minimum wage is supposed to be $22 an hour. That's what minimum wage is supposed to be. So that's where the workers have come up with that $15 an hour, because the president wanted, I think, his State of the Union speech earlier this year, he wanted, what, $9 an hour, and the Democrats wanted $10.10, and so the Republicans have knocked all that down, you know, in the House. And so, but the McDonald workers and other fast food workers who walked out, I think it was on yesterday, or Wednesday, they'll ask for $15 an hour. And some employers are actually giving their employees $15 an hour. I heard one guy on television on MSNBC about 3 weeks ago was up in New York. He was saying that he decided to go ahead and pay his workers $15 an hour, that him and his partner could afford the extras, you know, to get those people $15 an hour minimum wage at that restaurant. And they were losing a little profit for it, you know, themselves for their money, but it was worth it, trying to make sure, you know, they take care of their workers as well themselves. So $15 not bad. $15 need to be.
But the thing is, and this is the way I see it, you know, I think they deserve a raise. I don't know if I believe $15 is fair, but this is what I have a problem with. If you raise the McDonald's workers to $15 an hour, then doesn't the secretary say you owe me some more money, and then the factory workers say you owe me some more money, and so everybody then demands a higher wage, which I don't know how that's going to work for everybody. But I'm just saying, I mean, it will throw everything kind of out of whack if you pay someone who makes a burger. And I'm not, for anybody who works at a fast food restaurant, I'm not saying anything negative about it. I'm just making a point here. If you pay the person who makes a burger for a living, you know, which technically in this country they would consider an unskilled worker, don't they? Isn't that how they look at someone who makes a, who works at a fast food restaurant is technically considered unskilled? If you give them $15 an hour, then what do you pay the person who's got a college degree and working on a job? You see what I'm saying?
Well, like Elizabeth Warren said, she said we're behind anyway. She said the minimum wage in the country is supposed to be $22 an hour. That's the minimum wage. And she said these big companies who are now multi-billionaires, and some of them, you know, have $1 trillion asset, together. Well, you know, back in the 1960s, you had millionaires, and they become multi-millionaires. And now you have billionaires, multi-billionaires. That's because they have been keeping most of that profit for themselves instead of sharing it with the workers. $27.25 an hour plus with a federal withholding is not even minimum wage. It's slavery, you know. And so some people said I'll be $12 an hour. They got this debate going around about $12 an hour. But they could afford it. You know, the guy at State said that he could afford to pay it. Him and his partner talked about it. They're paying workers $15 an hour, and they're saying that the McDonald's and Walmart, you know, they own Walmart as well, saying that they can get their employees a lot more money, and that it raised them up close to that level, stating that they had to cut. Well, all they would do is just cut some of the pay of the top CEOs and whatnot. You know, some of their money would be cut just a little bit, but they could afford to cut and still have a wealthy lifestyle. You know, and get these people $15 an hour, $12, $15 an hour.
I agree. AJ Houston has joined. AJ Houston, what are your thoughts on the minimum wage increase?
Well, logically looking at it, he was right. They could afford it. But over the years, the plan was made to keep minimum wage down so the upper echelon could actually rake in more money. So there would have to be a cut in the upper echelon salaries in order to do that. And I don't really see that happening. You know, because you see them spending hundreds of millions of dollars just donate money as a corporation to campaigns. So you know they have the money to spend.
Well,
but that's not where they want to spend the money.
And they're competing for yachts. They have like Paul Allen and people like Vladimir Russian, you know, what's his name, Vladimir Putin from Russia. You know, Paul Allen, of course, you know, he's from the United States, but that was co-founder of Microsoft, or would be a Gates and whatnot. Well, you know, I'm looking at a show where these people are competing yacht competitors, who can build the biggest yacht you see, 125 feet long, and so many. I mean, then they create an island. They run out of islands. All the millionaires and billionaires and bought up all the islands in the world. So now they're creating islands. They're in the middle of the sea, bringing dirt, you know, big things of dirt, putting out there, actually creating islands and selling them, you know. And so they got money to do all that. They don't know what to do with the money. I mean, well, you know, that's just, you know, it's going like that. So they could afford to give the American people who help make them billionaires and millionaires, multi-millionaire billionaires. They can afford to share a little bit more of the wealth. Al Sharpton did a show last week. He was showing the minimum wage, you know, over the last decade, how it is basically stay the same. And those, you know, the pay level for the American labor worker, and how much it has rose for the people at the top, like 275%. And ours was way, like, what, 25 cents or less? And so they say it's just highway robbery. They just, you know, just robbing the American labor worker.
And here's what I think is appalling. Congress, as a body, is a bunch of hypocrites, because now they talk about how this is going to handicap a smaller business. There is some truth to that, but when you look at what the cost of living, the standard of living is, why is it that Congress has a bill that a bill that automatically resets itself every year? They get no less than a 5% increase in their wages. But then when it comes to the minimum wage, they're pitching a fit. The average congressional person makes $174,000 a year. That's not even including all the other perks and insurance benefits. So when you look at it, one congressman banks about $250,000 a year. That equates to about $130.20 an hour for a 40-day work week. And on top of that, they get 3 to 5% increase every year. Even if you just logically just took a relative cost of living increase for those fast food workers, we would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 an hour. And it does go back to companies used to do a lot better with profit sharing, but it's like it's already been said. There's so much pork barreling and greed in corporations that they are not willing to share the profit anymore, which is why when they then get pressed with having to pay workers higher wages, and by the way, the 5% of most any Fortune 500 company makes more money than all the other people put together. And then that's the backbone of the company. So I think there would have to be a gradual spend up to get people to the, I think what the cost of living would be today. But I think it's just sickening that people want folks to work at these minuscule levels of money and not be able to benefit, and whether it's through promotions or whether it's through being paid a higher living salary. Because some of these people, what I don't like about it is that they're the working poor, so yet they're working, trying to be a productive citizen, but some of these people make just enough money not to be able to be eligible for any public assistance. So it's a double-edged sword.
Well, you know what, the problem I see with it is this. I think I see a problem up ahead. You know, you see a problem up ahead when you're in traffic and you see the cars are, you see, what do you call it, brake lights everywhere, and you know that there's going to be a problem up ahead. Where I see this going is we're already having problems, I mean, with jobs being outsourced to other countries. Don't you see if we keep raising the wage here how that's going to make it easier to send jobs to India? Of course you can't send the McDonald's job to India until they, I guess, create robots or something. I don't know. But I can see other jobs when they start moving the wage on across the board, let's just say that jobs will be outsourced more and more. Does that make sense to anybody?
You know what? Yes, that makes sense, but guess what? Guess what happened when the government just loaned all these major banks and these car companies money? And
what?
Now they're recovering. They outsourced jobs. They did, Ford and Chrysler. Do you know how many plants they found after they got that money?
Yeah.
And shipped overseas and down to Mexico. So it's a catch-22 situation. This is something they're going to do anyway, because they're so greedy for the money that they want to outsource stuff so they can keep more of the profit.
And then the problem becomes if someone says, well, you know, I'll just start my own business. If you pay attention, all the mom-and-pop operations are closing down daily. I mean, some of the places that used to be landmarks are just disappearing because they can't compete with bigger establishments like the McDonald's or, you know, the Walmart or this, that, and the other. And so it's like, what is happening to America? I mean, when you really look at it, it's like they're just closing the small guy out all the way around. It just, it's a no-win situation. That's just the way I see that. It's just no-win.
Well, you know, the thing about the big companies going overseas is that as long as we got a Democratic president who believes in increasing the taxes on the wealthy, and especially the corporate wealthy American investors and whatnot, who want to take their businesses overseas after the American people have helped build them up, then, you know, I think they'll stay at home. You know, Obama passed that bill at times to where they have to pay more taxes in order to take the jobs overseas, whereas when President George W. Bush was in office, they were paying, you know, giving a lot of tax breaks for going overseas. And so they were fleeing the country, going to Mexico and, you know, and Japan, a lot of other places, you know, Kim and Clark, a lot of other companies, were just fleeing the country and leaving American people high and dry because they can get cheap labor somewhere else.
Well, what about NAFTA? Remember NAFTA? You don't remember NAFTA? Wasn't that kind of like the beginning of the outsourcing of jobs?
That was the beginning because it was illegal before. See, after NAFTA, it's when they opened the borders to where they could actually outsource a lot of jobs, and that was the beginning. Because I worked for Vought Aircraft at the time, and you know we started having parts coming from Japan and China that weren't made properly, so we were shut down sometimes because that's where our parts was coming from, and when they did that, it was a way of actually keeping the wages settled where all these other people get annual bonuses and percents of, you know, they get a minor percent of the company. But when you get a bonus and a percent of the company and a percent of the profit sharing and all this other stuff that you used to give the workers, you could actually keep the wages the same, even though you gave them, you know, 75 cents this year or $1.25, which is really not much in comparison to what you were actually making. But after so many years of that, it's hard to jump from giving $1.25 on your, you know, on your annual raise increase or whatever, and then giving $17, $20. You know, that's a big difference.
See, saying that it's okay for them to keep minimum wage at a certain level for as $8, $9 an hour, saying that they might go overseas and get cheaper labor, and that it will actually hurt us over in America. Well, you know, you go along with that theory, then what's going to eventually happen is when they go overseas and start getting all that cheap labor, you know, and get used to getting cheap labor, then they're going to continue more drive their wages down here in America or keep them. So for others to where, you know, we're going to be really stuck here.
When they attack the unions, see, that was the way to affect minimum wage, see, because the unions in America was actually the ones driving up minimum wage. So when they started attacking unions and working on union businesses, that actually truly affected the way any wages went, because when you get your union say, we need, I think it was American Airlines first, when they said it was about to go in bankruptcy, so they wanted the workers to take a cut in pay and all this other stuff, when the higher echelon still got the bonuses, they didn't get as much bonus, but they still got the bonuses. But then after American Airlines, I know was Vault, Northrop Grumman, all the other companies that had large unions start doing the same thing, attacking their unions.
Americans have. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kofa.
Go ahead. I lost my thought anyway. Go ahead. I was trying to hear what you were trying to say.
American people have not taken our power back, you know, and I think it's because we want things really cheap. And someone said, how is it that we have dollar stores all over the country? You know, how can you, and I've gone into dollar stores y'all many times, and I've often questioned how can they afford to sell the stuff as cheap as they do. Well, somebody made it clear. It's because it's all made in China. And so until we start taking some of our power back and buying products only made in America, this kind of thing will continue to happen. Until we use our buying power to demand more, then we will get less. And, you know, if we don't stand up and do more, we're going to get less. It's just simple as that.
That's correct, because see what they're doing also, they're trying to erase or take back all the gains that the people have already fought and died for, even in the early 1920s and 50s or whatever, you know, even when white women, like Susan B. Anthony, were fighting for women's rights, you know, and women's liberation and whatnot, and equal pay. Now they're trying to, you know, and voting rights, you know, even here in Texas, you know, they're trying to, they're attacking the woman right now for her voting power because this next governmental election coming up where Greg Abbott wants to be the new governor. So they know that Wendy Davis is on the ticket, and she's going to be more like the one that wins if they don't create this voter suppression, but they have passed new voter ID laws and whatnot. And so they're doing the same thing like Chris said a while ago about the labor unions and whatnot. Taking the power from the labor union, that's going to keep the wages down because the labor union was that was driving the minimum wage up and stuff. And so even civil rights, you know, and affirmative action, all this type of thing, they're trying to erase everything that's been gained here in America. These Republicans and these extreme conservatives, huh?
So look at Walmart's workers' society to try to, you know, do better, and they went in and they brought a union in, and everybody's looking at them like they're crazy, but I think they're realizing if we don't do something, we're never going to win this battle. You know what I'm saying? So they decided we're going to go get us a union. And for all of those Walmart workers who don't join in, y'all are crazy. I'm sorry, y'all are crazy. I mean, because you know what? If you're only making $7.25 an hour, I'm sorry, I take my chances. I really would. I would absolutely.
I would too, Carrie. No, definitely. Could you hear me in the background, Carrie? You can hear nothing in the background, could you?
No, I can hear you. Uh-uh. I can hear you fine.
Okay, you can hear anything in the background.
No, I can't hear anything in the background.
Good.
But I think if you don't stand up for something, you'll fall for anything. And I think fear is the worst thing that you can have. I think when there's five or six people that are willing to stand up and fight for everybody and the rest of the people sit back and hope for the best and hope that they're going to reap the benefits of somebody else's struggle, that's wrong. I think if you're making $7.25 or $7.40 an hour and Walmart treats you like, you know, they don't care about you. I think wasn't it on Thanksgiving that Walmart said they were taking up canned goods for their employees instead of giving them a turkey?
They were saying that they were taking up canned goods to feed them a meal, and the people said, well, once you give them a raise instead of feed them a dinner for working Thanksgiving Day, and then you cheat at the same instant when you collecting, ask people to donate canned goods just to feed them. So, yeah, Walmart, they're really on Walmart about their cheapness.
And what, Christopher?
And you know what? One, as we're talking about this, and I was thinking of other possibilities that would also help those minimum wage workers. One of the things I was sitting there thinking about, I said, well, you know what? It would make sense. If a person was actually making $7.25, $8, or $9 an hour, and they were working in their community, and that dollar was staying in their community versus probably going someplace else,
yeah,
it may be reasonable to say that people's minimum wage would work. But what happens, particularly in the black community, is that probably 90%+ of the dollar goes out and never returns. So if you got money steadily going out, you're going to have a debt-to-income ratio that's going to be off the chart. So I think part of the problem is not so much that people are making very little, but they don't spend that dollar after they do get that $7.25 an hour minus the taxes. They don't get to then spend it in the community that they live in. So it's not an economic force in the community. And then I think if the government, if the taxpayers' money can go towards big bank, big corporation bailout, then if you got a small mom and pop and they can meet a certain criteria, why not bail them out? And then encourage the community to have community-owned, just like Chinatown, just like Polish Town, and they keep their money in because they own their businesses. So we kind of have to have more of a push, a paradigm push and shift to have that happen. And then I can guarantee you, if somebody's making $8 or $9 and they're making that money and being able to spend that money in their community, it'll be less of an issue of them having to raise their wages.
But see, the definition of community is like a self-sustaining area, like the concept of the village that we used to have, concept of when we lived on the other side of the tracks and everything was ours and we had barbershops and we had all these companies that we – but see, when we moved to the suburbs and created all that, we are disjointed people. We are only reactionary. We only react after something happens. We never come together to be the catalyst for something not to happen. So in order for that to happen, we need a group of us, a group of us to sit down and say, okay, where are we going to start? Because we need an example on how to make this work. You can't think it's going to happen everywhere at the same time. We have to have this example, this model, this one unit that we say, okay, this is how we're going to rebuild our communities, rebuild the system of our communities, the foundation of having money, I guess, regenerated in our communities. You know, because I think once a year they have what, a small business charity where you buy from small businesses or whatever.
They just had
it was a couple of weeks ago they had small business charity.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
it was the charity after Black Friday. And I don't understand Black Friday, but anyway, I'm not getting into that.
Well, that's good, though. What you're talking about there, you know, for the community thing, with, you know, for just spending the money back in the community, and you know, instead of building continue to build a black community up economically. But also, you know, if they pass this thing for $15 an hour minimum wage in the country as a whole, it's still going to help the country because that money is going to circulate back in the country. Well, if Americans are buying American goods instead of focusing on buying cheap Japanese or Chinese goods, this type of stuff come from Mexico and different places, I try to buy American-made merchandise as much as I possibly can. I just not be conscious of that, but doing some research and whatnot, it's best that we buy America. But
that's how you keep America strong. I mean, it makes no sense that we are complaining about jobs being outsourced, and some of them, you know, are companies that we have worked on, and then we sit down and we say, well, they're outsourcing jobs, but we buy stuff made from China. That's crazy.
Because
you know,
capital losing money over here, they're going to want to leave this country. There's all these different foreigners are losing profit and gains by being over here, you know, because they're not. Because all American people, most American people woke up that they need to spend money in America, American-made product. Then maybe challenge some of them pull out.
I agree.
But that's going to be hard to do if we don't get a handle on the budget and stop owing China so much money. Because China then, we opened the door for them to come over here to buy property, to do a lot of things here that they don't even let us do in their own country. But some of that is almost blackmail because we owe them so much money. So I think that part of the push in terms of at our level is pretty much what AJ had said. And a lot of that deals with most black individuals do not understand, by and large, most black folks don't live in a black community. They live in a black neighborhood.
Yeah.
The community, because if you don't control the police, you don't control the fire department, you don't control your socioeconomic and your commerce, you live in a neighborhood. So we do have to work and sit down so we can develop that plan of where we start and move from there step by step to regain our community. Because right now, I mean, we spend too much, I think it was $4 or $5 trillion, we spend too much money as black folks not to capitalize on our own money, but we have to have that infrastructure and the businesses to support that. I think we'll be good to go.
Hey, you know,
go ahead, Karen. Y'all are going to be hard to balance this budget. You know, this budget is high. I mean, you know, this debt, that, you know, this national debt is high now. You know, when George Bush came into office, it was balanced, you know, under President Bill Clinton. And now the surplus is way out there. And so it's going to take some time to get it back where it's, you know, supposed to be and to regain some surplus. And so it's going to, I don't know, it's just going to take a minute to get us back where we need to be at in order to get out of China's pocket. You know, because right now we're really slaves to China because, you know, even the good books say that the borrower is a slave to the lender. And so we're basically a China slaves.
But guess what? You, that is absolutely true. But guess what happens if you own your own bank? Guess what happens if you print your own money? The Federal Reserve Bank is the reason that this country will never get out of debt, because it's not a branch of the government. The government does not control the printing of the money. They don't control essentially if it's a silver or a gold-based undercurrent to support that money. And I think that's part of the divide on Capitol Hill, because there's too much money being made. And I think a lot of smart people know that I think we'd be closer to closing the gap on the national debt if the government actually controlled the so-called Federal Reserve, because it's privatized banks. So what would be their motive to really want the deficit to close if, by keeping the deficit open, they keep the government at bay? Kind of like what you said. It's kind of like China keeping us as hostage. The Federal Reserve has the federal government and the Department of Treasury a hostage.
Mm. And, you know,
see, Russia was talking about devaluing the American dollar because of the American debt is one thing, and American politics, for as this going over the cliff, won't let America default on their financial responsibility, you know, and the credit rating going down from AAA, this type of stuff. So Russia, as a couple of weeks ago, was talking about devaluing the American dollar. And so if that happens, we're going to be even worse over right to what we already are in at this particular time.
I agree. You know, speaking of that, I saw something, and I'm trying to Google it now. I was listening to a radio show, and they were talking about how many banks have failed. And I think they said at some point it was 1,800 banks, and now we're down to like 700 and something. That's not good. Because,
yes,
you know, eventually it's, say what?
Go ahead.
But
right,
that
you're
sounds
right,
like eventually we're going to be stuck with, like, the three big lending institutions, which is never good. I mean, because then whatever they say goes, and you have no options, and either you do business with them or else. And it, that just sounds like it's getting scary. I'm looking for the article that supports what I heard on that radio show. But that was really disturbing that, you know, I think they were saying since 2010 we went from, like, 1,800 banks down to, like, 700 and some odd banks. And that means that we're closing banks at record numbers. Why is that? You know, and
that's not good. That's not good, because if that happens, you know, if the gap continues to close like that, like I say, they will be able to monopolize, you know, the banking business, what they're basically doing now, but it's going to be even worse than what it is, you know, today. And so they're going to really be handling us, you know, controlling us a little bit more than what they are now, because we won't have any options to explore. And just like utility companies, you know, if you move to certain cities, like small towns, or Mount Pleasant, Texas, or whatever, you only have two different sources in which you are allowed by that city to buy electricity from. You're on the outskirts, you buy booty cash, and if you're on the inskirts, you buy from America, such and such. But if you're in Paris, Texas, somewhere like Dallas or whatever, you can bring in whoever you want to bring in, you know, for electricity bills. So it's good that we try to keep, you know, those banks open and keep the American economy flowing, so that we are able to keep our options open.
Yeah, because I think the story, the person was reporting on it was saying that some of these payday loans, the interest is like 200%. And it was like, this is worse than the mob, you know, I mean, really, or mafia, you know, lending you money. That's crazy. I mean, that's like, they might as well break your bones. I mean, because they're breaking you, you know, everywhere else. That's crazy. 200%? I mean, I don't know. I mean, how could
that be? Go ahead. When you get to, I'm coming on. Go ahead. No, listen.
What I understood, the way they're getting around it is they're saying that's not a loan, that's a line of credit. And because they're calling it a line of credit, they can get away with charging you 200%. That's crazy.
Well, here the catch is, those are considered, they're up under what they call usury laws. And so that means excessive interest. And so what they have you do is they have you to write a check, which is supposed to be a promissory ticket there, a note, for when you get paid. And if you don't pay, then they hold a check over your head, I'm going to run and take it to the DA's office. Well, several years ago I had one when I was before I was settled up with this company I had, whatever. Well, anyway, I was kind of doing bad time. Well, anyway, kind of find out, the American people don't know that the DA office don't even take those type of checks. They would tell you, well, we don't take them. That's considered user, and those on the user law, they have to collect their own money. And so people kept calling me after that saying that, hey, I got this check out. I've been had 3 months. Then they called me a year later. I got this check here and sent me a letter for a year, and I'm going to take it to the DA office on Monday if you don't come pay it. And so I'm like, well, go ahead and take it to them, you know, because I've already investigated. And the fine print really said there's no more or less than an unsecured loan. That's all it is.
Really?
So, yes. It's, but they hold the check over your head like, I'm going to take it to the DA Monday. If you don't come in, and DA going to come in and indict you or give you a charge for writing a hot check. But it's not, DA do not collect for them. It's under the usury laws.
And, you know, it makes sense, though, because they would be collecting a whole lot of times. I mean, really, because you can imagine the default rate on those. I mean, because typically the people that get those type of loans are people who don't make a whole lot of money. I mean, now and then you get somebody who gets in a strap and needs money real fast. But the majority of the people that they, you know, make money off of are people who don't make a lot of money.
That's right. It's the vulnerable segment of the population, and then that's the same with the those type of payday loans, the title loans, and all that stuff. My church has a program where we actually try and advertise mainly word of mouth, but we're trying to do more of a formal publication. But where we have individuals that can counsel individuals in terms of, you know, if you don't have money or what the problem is going on, we try and offer some monetary support for individuals, but also some educational tools, because we're dealing with a lot of people, like you said, usually don't make a lot, get themselves in a hard fix, and then they end up at one of these organizations. But it's sad that they can get around laws that are in place to still go after the vulnerable population. But at the same time, people have to be responsible as well. But I think in the Black community, there's like just not enough voices to try and get people prior to that or during while they're going through these hardships and times. There's not enough social services. Doesn't seem to be enough to at least have a presentation for people so people can have some place to go before they get themselves tied up into these things.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the church. You can't go to the church today and tell them you in need. I mean,
Now, my church you can. And here's how we do it, though. Most people, unfortunately, churches have been hit hard. You get the bleeding heart, and then they go from one church to another church to another church. Now, at our church, kind of how we do it is we have tried to network with some of the other churches, but some don't want anything to do because, you know, like you said, they don't plan on helping anybody. But when someone who is in need, if they say, well, I don't have any food, I don't this or that, okay, we may initially say, okay, here's a $25 jewel card so you can go get something. Now, what we will require is that if you need help beyond this, here's the dates and the times that you can come to our church. We will sit down with you. We will feed you. But then after that, you need to pull out bills or the lack thereof. And so then there's a little bit of dialogue and programming so we can try and see where the person is at or where to direct them. But just the church giving up money just because you say my light's getting ready to get cut off, come pay my bill. Well, if I do that, what if I don't identify what got you into that circumstance in the first place? But most church bodies are not willing to take that time with people. They essentially either give them a love offering and send them on their way, or they don't give them nothing at all and say, we don't do that here, go on your way.
And, you know, there's things in the community. I remember the utility company here, when they switched to the smart meter, the people's utility bills were going just, like, outrageous. And a lot of old people were going to this place to get assistance because, you know, they were not able to pay these really high utility bills. And, you know, the thing is, there's not a lot of services like that. And it was like either this particular organization was able to help them, or a lot of these old people ended up getting their utilities cut off because there just weren't a lot of services available. You know, you get assistance 1 month, you can't come back no more, or, you know, just all types of glitches that would prevent someone from getting continued assistance. So I agree the community needs to step up and do more, but it just seems like right now everybody's strapped. You know, that's the poor thing about what's going on is, where do you go get help?
Yeah, I think the community needs to step up a little bit more and hold a class on finances, especially here in the South, you know, because we're in a, we come out of a slavery situation here in the South where slave mentality highly exists. And so economics and stuff like credit scores and buying homes and stuff is not promoted enough in the Black community. You know, and so, well, you know, we really need to, you know, kind of, you know, we're going to deal with economics. We need to get into some type of sourcing to where we can educate the people on what to look for in the credit scores, you know, what is your extra credit score, your middle score, whatnot, and how to build your credit, how to have stuff cleaned up off your credit, you know, how to go about purchasing homes, whatnot. We need a lot more Black home owners and this type of things here and stuff. And then, like a business, classes, how to apply for grants to get a business loan, you know, in order to start your own business, type of stuff here. So we don't have enough of that stuff for us to focus on economics here in the South, especially. You know, you go places like Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know if Atlanta, Georgia, Atlanta's in the South, though, I think. But Atlanta, Georgia is a lot better, though, for us here in the South. But upstate, you know, the Black people over there in those states there, they're very well, you know, there is a case a lot different from what they're giving them.
And I agree, there needs to be more education done. I was a mortgage broker for over a decade, child, and I'll be honest with you. I made a living off bad credit. I mean, seriously, I made a really good living off people with bad credit, and that was because at that time the market was open for B paper loans. And so the majority of the people I did had bad credit, and the unfortunate part is most of them had been to some form of credit repair, and that was where they paid somebody $800. They made a promise, or $1,000 or $1,500, who had made them a promise to, you know, get all the bad stuff off their credit in 30 days, and they'd be able to, you know, go get some magnificent home, that type of thing. And so we, a lot of times, we perish for the lack of knowledge. I mean, and I was just amazed at how many people came to me, you know, after they paid the people the enormous amounts of money to clean up their credit, only to find out that it didn't work. So, you know, we definitely need more, information on how to go about cleaning up our credit correctly. Listen, y'all, we're down to our second hour of the show, and we're just kicking back tonight. Y'all, it's cold outside. You know, everybody's on the phone line tonight. Y'all, we cold wherever we are, you know, whether that is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or Christopher is in Chicago, it's just cold. So tonight we're just kind of being very informal and talking about a little bit of everything. You know, we're talking about Mandela and the fact that the fast food workers went on strike and payday loans, and we're going to get into some other things. So if you'd like to talk to us tonight, chime in. If you're cold where you are, call us and tell us what the temperature is where you're sitting tonight. But it's cold here in Dallas-Fort Worth. And so tonight we're just taking it slow. We're not really being formal at all. We're just doing us tonight. You know, on the phone line is A.J. Houston, Khufu Kush, also known as Carl Mitchell, and Major Christopher Bonds. And tonight we're just taking it slow and just chopping it up, if you will. But, y'all, that's it. You know, one of the things that I have never participated in, and I refuse to participate in, I don't care if they was giving it away. I refuse to get up out of my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Black Friday to get anything. I'm sorry, I just don't do that. I've never understood standing out of the cold. I'm not a person who particularly likes lines anyway. I won't stand in line for food more than 15 minutes, and I definitely won't stand out in below zero temperatures trying to get a TV for $200. Do y'all understand Black Friday, or is it just me?
Well, right now it's Black Thursday evening. They switched it.
This is true.
It's called Black Friday, but it starts right after Thanksgiving dinner. See, in a minute, Black Friday will start in March. Black Friday will start in March soon.
Well, Walmart started Walmart started at 6 o'clock p.m. this year. Normally it started what 12 o'clock a.m. But I've never participated in Black Friday. I never have. So.
Yeah, but they started 6 p.m. Thursday, 6 p.m. Thanksgiving, not the Friday.
Yeah, they moved it up.
You're right.
I just never, now this is me, but I've never thought it was safe to go stand out in the dark, in the cold, waiting for a store to open. I mean, if someone was a thief, wouldn't that be like prime real estate to go and like hit? I mean, that's just crazy. Why would you do that?
I've done it before, Karen. But when I did it, I went to a Best Buy over off of 20 over there in Arlington. We had to park almost on the side of the freeway and walk down and walk around the fence. Walk 2 miles to the store because there was nowhere else to park. And
no.
That was the first bad thought. But after that, I was like, I'm not doing that no more. That was ludicrous.
Yeah, I've heard of that because I used to date a young lady and said, well, a lady that's been a friend of mine for years, and then we dated for a little while, and she wanted $2,000 to go. A few years ago, I was dating her, and so about 4 or 5 years ago, and she wanted $2,000 to go to the Black Friday. And I told her, ain't no way I'm going to give you $2,000. And so,
I had to over the charges.
David Dad made that. No, I didn't do that.
If you had gone up there to that $22 an hour you were trying to get for minimum wage, you'd have had it.
That's correct.
Well, I did go to Black Friday and did my first one because my 11-year-old, well, actually the whole family did. But we didn't go to any of the inner city stores. We went out south to Orland Park where it really wasn't a lot in terms of lines. It was a more, I think the mall that we went to, most of the places were open and they were having sales. I mean, you can find some good things. I really wasn't looking for anything, just kind of went with the family. Yeah, we left 2:30, whatever, we left in the morning, and I dreaded it. But a lot of the stuff is actually just clearing stuff that they're trying to get rid of last models in a lot of cases, not all cases, but and so they'll sell it for cheaper. And then sometimes it's really just so that I think that people don't understand that what they're actually doing is they're giving away or showing you the truth without directly telling you. In essence, by them dropping the price on a lot of the items that they were, they're essentially telling you what you were paying and getting ripped off for in the first place.
Yeah,
in terms
I agree.
Of a profit model.
I guess we're having a problem with y'all. There's people been killed on Black Friday. I mean, fights break out. I mean, people are like, they just break in the doors. Didn't it a couple of years ago a black guy who opened the door at Walmart, unfortunately, rest in peace, whoever that young man was, they when he opened the doors, they just all stampeded through the doors and trampled him. Remember that?
Yeah. But Carrie, I'm saying there's fights on the freeway. There's what road rage on the freeway when it's not even that bad of traffic. I understand that it's a horrible thing, but there's, you know, all these other things that happen. So Black Friday can't be the catalyst for it. But I understand when you open the door, you know, you kind of, it's that way. But Black Friday this week was Black Thursday. I went to Walmart up the street from me. And I forgot it was Thursday evening, Thanksgiving. I said, let me run up here before we get crazy. There were parking lots. I'm saying every store, gas station, the whole place across the street, everything was, there was nowhere to park, nowhere to drive. And I was like, what is going on? That's when I remember that they started to sell early. So I'm quite sure the store was nasty, like you're saying.
Well, in the state, they had a lady, they say that, now it's Facebook. Some of the stories on Facebook be true. Some of them I found to be untrue. But the lady was in line to get the, well, they had one Xbox something, New Xbox 3, whatever it is, the Xbox, I don't know about the games. But they had this new Xbox just come out. They had one left. And so it was three of them in line to get it. She killed the two. She stabbed two of them to death to get
that. That was a hoax. I remember seeing that story. That was a hoax.
Did you see that on Facebook?
I saw somebody talking about it on the news. It was a hoax. She didn't kill no two people for no Xbox One.
Okay. So you read a story, a topic. You ran across the article.
What do they call that now? Satire news, where they just put, I guess they just over, what do they call it? They overplay a story. The gist of it is true, but they'll kind of overplay it. And I don't even know why that's allowed, the satire news that we see all the time now. I mean, it's hard to determine the truth from fiction until you get to the very end, it seems like, and it'll just be something about the end, the closing, that just doesn't make sense that a reporter would write it that way. And typically that's how I can tell that it's satire. Can y'all see the same thing when you read it?
When somebody kill someone over the last Xbox, kill two people, stabbing them, and last you get the last box. But now you got some pretty crazy people in America. America's gone beyond craziness, you know. So you know you have to store the thought anyway, you know, because we have some pretty crazy people in America that do all kind of things we never would imagine that they would actually reach out and participate in.
See, I thought it was satire the other day when they were talking about the lady who killed the people at the Alabama game. Did anybody see that story?
I saw that one, too. She killed them about not cheering for the team or something, right?
Yeah, that was a real story. Yeah. I thought it was a joke.
Was it a joke? It was what? That was a joke, wasn't it?
No, I thought it was a real story.
It seemed like it was a real story. I mean, but then again, it might be another one of those hoax stories, you know. That's the whole thing about these
stories.
It was
all over the internet where this wasn't the lady. She was with someone else, and the game was over, and Alabama, you know, didn't win, and the lady that they were talking to wasn't that messed up about the fact that Alabama didn't win, and allegedly she killed a woman just because the woman wasn't upset enough that Alabama had lost. Wasn't that the way the story went?
I think that is a true story. Yes. Yeah, at the end of the game, the Iron Bowl football game. So she was angry at the woman for some reason.
I mean, is anybody
that crazy? That made that crazy. How crazy can you get in America? you know, with American people, and that's gone wild. You know, like people gone wild. You know, they got what they have a movie called Girls Gone Wild. You got people gone wild. They have a movie with people gone wild in America now.
Wondering, you know, why is it, and I think we all have stresses, because God knows I've had my amount of stress this year that could take, you know, I've had a lot, let's just say that. But I think I still have a foundation, a solid foundation that says, regardless of what's going on, God is ultimately in control. And if he allowed it to happen, obviously I'm stronger than I thought I was, and eventually you'll get through it. That's how I look at everything. But I'm wondering, why is it that so many people appear to be snapping? You know, I mean, just like twigs. I mean, and I'm just wondering, is it in the atmosphere? Is it some subliminal messages? You know, I mean, what are we dealing with? Why are so many people losing it?
You got a lot of undiagnosed, unmedicated folk running around.
Well, one thing, you know, we have one state who has just instituted what they call Sharia law, and that's Islamic law. One city,
oh, that's Sharia law.
Yeah, Sharia law. And so, you know, the Sharia law, they don't play. It's just like, you know, I think the American people done got too relaxed in their punishment phrases. Whereas other countries, even though it's Islamic, something like, you know, like they whooped that guy that time, that white fellow, what was he in Portland? That place. But anyway, they whooped him because he tried to bring someone car, burglary. The white fella from America went over there to Portugal or somewhere and stole something. They whooped him behind lashes and America was mad. In other countries, you know, like they say, like, you know, you got all these molesters around here. They have to put the signs up. Old Jimbo is moving to the neighborhood. He's a child molester. But he wouldn't be none of that if they didn't kill enough child molester, cut enough of them hands off right there on television. Cut a hand off an arm, or which hand, which finger did you play with the child? And I've even seen some people try to justify in the Bible. The Bible told him to do this and that, all, you know. And so the market just done got too relaxed or too easy on punishment. And then, you know, sometimes we want them to be light on us on some type of punishment. But it really, really, it needs to be a little harder. On some crime like child molestation and beating the elderly and raping the elderly and raping folks and impregnating them. And then Texas don't want to abort the child for the woman, this type of stuff here. They need to be a little more hard on those type of crime. Then they get the message out there that they're not going to tolerate that type of behavior. You know, I read Arca one time. I read Arca a few years ago, but it was in the Saudi Kingdom. Someone tried to smuggle some drugs into the Saudi Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And now they beheaded him that Thursday. He was the 25th one. That was like in May that they had beheaded that year. You know, he was the 25th one that they had beheaded that year, and it was in the month of May, you know, for offenses and stuff. And so that means they don't commit crime like that so easily. You know,
oh, I agree. Christopher Bonds, why are we implementing Sharia law when we're in the United States?
I had to switch phones. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Well, here's part of the problem that having had to go through the criminal justice system wrongfully and then get my name cleared, I can tell you that it's not so much that they need to create new laws or they need to make the laws on the books more severe. I believe what they need to do is make them more proportionate. I think part of the problem with crime is the disproportionate of who gets what. If I'm found guilty of something that is as a black man and my white counterpart is found guilty as a white man of the equal crime, we've both been found guilty, whatever the book says in terms of the minimum or the maximum, either person should get. But what happens in America is based on who you are, what your last name is, or how much money or influence you have, I may get 5 years for the same thing that you did, but you may get 5 years, 4 years suspended, 1 year probation. That's wrong. So you drive the mechanism of corruption, of basically increasing crime, because white-collar crime versus the blue-collar crime then becomes too. And when they say that, they're not saying that one segment of population is committing different crimes. They're making a distinction. Yes, you're both committing a crime, and it may be in some cases the same crime, but you're not going to get the same thing, which is why you have more minorities in prison. I was saying Sharia law in most countries is still, I can tell you, I was over in Iraq and Kuwait for a year. In general, the poorer you are, the more you're going to be likely to be one of the ones to be beheaded, whether you're innocent or guilty. The more class and rank and money you have, I guarantee you, they may slap you on the wrist. They may even throw you in one of their dungeon jails for a while, but you're not going to be beheaded. So,
oh, really?
It doesn't work unless you're going to proportionally meet the crime, the sentence to meet the crime. Otherwise, it's Jim Crow. You're just spinning your wheels.
You know,
so
you know,
justice,
go ahead, Karen.
The color of justice across the world.
Oh yes, it's money.
What were you saying, Coco?
Well, you know, I can believe very much of what he's saying, and I'm glad that he stated that, because I've always wondered just how for the Muslim world takes towards the light-skinned Muslim versus the dark-skinned Muslim, because we see in the world everywhere else that I don't care if you're a Christian, a Muslim, or a Jew. You go in the Jewish world, you see the white Jews on the top and the black Jews on the bottom. You come in the Christian world, you see the white Christian on the top and the black Christian on the bottom most time. And then you go to the Islamic world, you see the light-skinned Islamic Muslim on the top, and the black Islamic Muslim on the bottom. And so even during slavery times, which we're about to get into during Black History Month, we'll go more in depth into it, where the Muslim during that time when the land slave trade was going on, even though they had black Muslim brothers in West Africa who had been enslaved, they sit back and fold their arms up, you know, and all along claiming brotherhood and brought Islam to the continent, you know, as one brotherhood and one faith, they allowed white men to come in and subdue the other black Muslim without any protest or any type of uprising. But now when they come to America, or when the white men ride down on the Islamic world like they have here the last few years, they want the black Muslim to be of the Islamic faith to go out and strap a bomb on him, you know, and blow up something in America, you know, be a terrorist for him.
Piggybacking on what you just said, this is one of the reasons. I was reading the biography, an autobiography of Malcolm X, and this is one of the reasons that he had a little bit of riff with the Nation of Islam is because he was basically taught and indoctrinated that Islam and Muslims are not white. And when he went to Egypt and he visited a couple of those places in Africa and he saw different color, pigment, melanin skin folk that were in the mosque with him, he knew that he had been fed a bunch of stuff. So, but he also found out that it's more inherently in the best interest for forward progression of black folks that you're going to have to work with the white community. I'm not saying allow them to lead you, but what I am saying is that we live in the world that you're going to have to work with that power structure or demand stuff from that power structure, but you're going to have to get some people on your side too.
Yeah, where That's was correct. That case where the judge just recently got in prison for fixing cases? He had made it known to the prosecutors and to the attorneys that were coming through his court that he was having money problems, and they, I guess they began to ask him for favors, and in return he was given money, and you know, he got caught doing it. But basically, I think he turned state's witness on several of the prosecutors. And did anybody see that story beside me, or am I just – I'm going to find it online. It was amazing how this particular guy was just so crooked in all these particular cases. So, of course, now isn't that going to open up – well, I guess you can't recharge him for double jeopardy if you let
him go. Appeals, if he was following wrong doing like that, then they're going to open the courts up for a lot of appeals of cases that he ruled on. You know, you're going to have a lot of – that's a black offender, but more likely he abused them the most, you know. But you have some white offenders, but there's a professional misconduct going on in his court system, whatever, disproportionate citizen going on in his courtroom. Then if he signed these cases, then there's going to be a lot of appeals.
Yeah.
You know what, Kay, I did see something about that case, but I just real quick, I want to say something related to my case again, dealing with the judges. What a lot of people don't know is that there's a lot of drug deals that go on in the back where judges pretty much, it's almost like premeditated sentencing or dismissals. After 6 months of having to go through the criminal justice system, I'm at the final phase where they're determining whether we're going to go to trial or not so they can try and basically prosecute me for elder abuse, which they knew I didn't do. So on November 17th of 2008, I'm in the courtroom. My family's there. The church and members and so forth is there. The military backing is there. And the state's attorney walks up and whispers to the judge. The judge then calls a sidebar. They all go into the back. 5 minutes later, my attorney motions to me to come out into the hallway. And I had already knew what was going to happen. I knew they had to dismiss it or we were going to go to trial. It was either or. And my attorney looked at me and said, well, you know, it's kind of a it may go to the right or it may go to the left, but do you have the other $5,000 of my because I had already paid him $5,000 for a retainer fee. He simply asked me, because I had to pay $50,000 bond, and so I had to come up, so I had to pay $5,000 that. So they still had that $5,000. And what he said to me is that, well, do you still have that? I said, well, what does that have to do with what you just went in the back and discussed with the judge and the state's attorney? He said, well, you know, we were just discussing the particulars and so forth. So, well, all these folks was in the bed, and after I told him that he because he thought I was some black thug that he wasn't going to get the rest of his money. So after I guaranteed that he would get that $5,000, he went back in the back room again, 10 minutes, came out, judge hit the gavel, state's attorney said case dismissed.
No. So you believe it.
So
if you had,
it was never about was he innocent
order.
Or guilty. At
wow.
the end of the day, by the time November 18th rolled around, the city had already got almost $12,000 out of me. So that's not even counting the last 5 years of fighting. It's a money pillar. And these they don't care anything about. And that's what I'm saying, the disproportionate. Now,
yeah.
I was fortunate that I was smart and that I had put money away in my 401K and I actually could retain a criminal defense attorney. Now, I'm a jailhouse attorney. I was a much more better attorney than the Caucasian attorney I had. But guess what? The system will be very harsh on you if you don't play the game and have an attorney.
I believe that. Oh, yeah, you go in there and say,
you can understand. This judge was getting money over, and people knew he was doing it and sending folks to jail wrongfully. But they went along.
I believe that. I believe that happens so often that we don't even realize it. That judge that I was talking, one of these cases, I think it was two actually, that Pennsylvania judge sentenced to 28 years for selling those kids to the prison system. Y'all heard about that case, right? Oh, y'all did.
Yeah, I did. I heard about that one because it was in juvenile courts.
Yeah. It's
I heard
Mark
about that.
Chiavarella, a junior, a 61-year-old former judge in Pennsylvania, has been sentenced to nearly 30 years in prison for literally selling young juveniles for cash. He was convicted of accepting money in exchange for incarcerating thousands of adults and children in a prison facility owned by a developer who was paying him under the table. The kickbacks amounted to more than $1 million. Y'all, that's scary. That's scary.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mm.
So,
but he's the only judge that they basically has caught. So it's not an isolated incident. It's business as usual. This is what goes on every day in every major city in these criminal courts.
Because didn't we also see that there is a situation in which the state, was that, Kufa, was that you talking about, the states are required to guarantee these prisons, these private prisons, so many inmates? Was that you, Kufa?
No, I don't think I was the one talking about that.
No, that was me.
That was
no,
you.
Yeah.
The
federal prisons that have gone under privatized contracts because the private companies still charge an arm and a leg, but they can run them cheaper than the state or the federal government can. So the guarantee was they did a profit analysis or predictability scale, and it tells them on average how many per prison they have to have at any given time to hit that profit margin. So the profit margin that they have predicted means that the jails, when they come in and they do a contract and this analysis and then the state or the federal government agrees to pay them this price, it's based on having 90% of that prison filled at any given time. And if it goes below that, there's a certain amount of time that they have to get an injection of inmates to get it back up to 90%, or there's a penalty that the government has to pay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this prison industrial complex is real.
Now, I do know that, you know, when you go through diagnostics, I heard these prison systems, that when you go through the, you know, you see the sociologist or whatever, they're the one who's got, you know, I guess kind of size you up and see what your skills and then, you know, your labor skills are, so they can document your file. And when you get to the prison industrial complex, then they pull you, according to your record, what you put down, or what your qualifications may or may not be. And so if you have building capabilities, carpentry and whatnot, sheet metal and this type of stuff, you know, concrete layer, brick layers, and, you know, blueprint reels, this type of stuff. You got all type of people going to prison, you know, that state and fed. They pull you, and so they can, you know, help work on these prisons and whatnot at a cheaper labor. And then not only just at the prison system, but they work other projects. You know, they got wooden homes, and, you know, they have the inmates doing all types of stuff in cheap labor, like you said.
Hey, Cole,
does everybody remember the movie? I think it was called The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
What did that white guy do?
He was working. He was private work for the warden, wasn't he?
And because he was an accountant in civilian world.
Yeah. Was that Warren Freeman, Morgan Freeman, with him?
Yeah.
That's movie.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that he was doing bookkeeping illegally for the warden, who was ripping off the state.
Yeah.
So they sized him up, and they found out that he was a tax consultant and an accountant, and they sure used him to the T. So from what you're saying, yes, that happens as they size some people up, because it's a free market, and they're going to get work out of you one way or the other.
You know what? And this story further says that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has overturned some 4,000 convictions issued by him between 2003 and 2008, claiming he violated the constitutional rights of the juveniles, including the right to legal counsel and the right to intelligently enter a plea. Some of the juveniles he sentenced were as young as 10 years old, y'all. That judge was convicted of 12 counts, including racketeering, money laundering, mail fraud, tax evasion. And he was also ordered to repay $1.2 million in restitution. His Keep for Cash program has revealed that corruption is indeed within the prison system, mostly driven by the growth in private prisons seeking profits by any means necessary. Y'all, that's scary.
You know, the Justice Department do actually have a lot of counties and municipal courts up under investigation. It just takes a minute for them to, you know, to make they round, you know, to dealing with these and investigating these, you know, municipalities and whatnot. And so I think we're going to see a lot of that here in the future, especially with Eric Holder being the U.S. Attorney General. I think Eric Holder is trying to, you know, one of the best things that has happened to the criminal justice system for is getting out there and don't mind kind of, you know, being outspoken against this proportionate sentencing and mandatory minimums, is, you know, this type of stuff here. So I think we're going to get a lot of
Kofu, I have to agree to disagree. I think there is a lot of good that the U.S. Attorney General has done, but there are more black men and women in jail and going to jail under his watch than any other white U.S. Attorney General. Even in my case, as I wrote these individuals, as I presented my case and others in terms of class action, and here in the city of Chicago, Eric Holder has in a craftful way, ensured that he didn't really have to investigate the Illinois Attorney General, Lisa Manigan, or any other corruption going on in Chicago, even in the mayor's office. So I kind of agree with you, but I would say from my own personal experience and filing a formal complaint with the Illinois and the U.S. Attorney General, it's a toothless tiger, because the letter that they wrote me, and I actually filed it based on the criteria that their office has, and they wrote me a letter back and said they couldn't investigate it based on the criteria that they asked me to file a formal complaint in the first place. So I'm saying he's like a Sambo, and I don't want to have to be so critical against my brother, but I'm telling you, for big business, for individuals that have the luxury of a name or of influence, they will get assistance from the U.S. Attorney General. If you are a small potato that has been wronged, do not expect them or just about any other civil rights organization, let alone your state or the U.S. Attorney General, to help you, because I don't think they're in the business of helping the small potato.
Good note.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about, we're going to, I think, do a show on this before Christmas, on the fact that the Federal Reserve turns 100. Yeah, have y'all looked into that at all? Want to speak on that at all? You want to hold out until we go into that later in the month?
I have researched this on Federal Reserve. I'd like to go into that a little bit more later in the month.
Okay, we can do
that. Yeah, I want to get time to get my arsenal together.
Yeah, that's the truth, because you know what? Yeah, we know there has been some issues with the Federal Reserve. So, and, you know, it is just what it is. I mean, it just is what it is. And so, you know, we're going to talk about that later in the month. That's an upcoming show, probably just before Christmas, maybe even next week if the guys can get it together between now and then. But I was looking for the story, and I can't find it, where the other judge got in trouble. There was a judge this week that went to prison. For that. But, yeah, you know, I wanted to talk about A.J. Houston. And, by the way, are you still awake over there? A.J. Houston had a serious back pain, y'all, today. So he may be nursing some back. He had back injury years and years ago. So A.J. Houston did tell me prior to the show that he was hurting really badly with his back. But, y'all, listen, what about the fact that the government is building underground bunkers? Does that concern anybody but me? I don't know. I mean, maybe y'all are not concerned. But I'm just wondering.
Underground what?
Bunkers. Why is the government building underground bunkers?
For the obvious. I've been in some of them.
Have you?
Yes,
really?
I have.
How did you go to an underground bunker?
Well, I've been in some abandoned ones, but I've been in some active ones, too. I'll just say that. It depends on the operation. I mean, honestly, you can Google. They have it won't necessarily tell you locations. It won't necessarily tell you who they're necessarily for. But the government, in most of these cases, they're not the ones. The military, they're not the ones that build these bunkers. They're usually privatized. And it's where they usually build them. If they're using them for certain reasons, they're probably top secret or confidential. So the general public doesn't know. I don't even know, because you have to have top secret clearance security for most of that. But in most, they're building it because you don't build weapons of mass destruction yourself. And others have them, and you don't think there could be a possibility that they could use them. That's just common sense. So these are there because there are certain people, not only in the military but the civilian world too, that would be and would have access to these that the average person would not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bottom line. So the taxpayers' money is used for that. And so basically, in an event that they would need to utilize these, most people won't be able – they won't even know about them.
To me, those would be put in place to preserve the more brighter minds, which they feel the more value people in the pond. It's just like you playing chess. You know, when you're playing chess, you know, some pieces are more important than others. It's just like some people they feel more important than others. So those they are put in place so the people who are considered more important than the others need to be preserved in order to get things reworking and running and organized in the world and the country, a country in the world, they're going to be the ones that's in those caves, those enclaves.
Exactly. A.J. Houston, you agree with that?
Not completely, I'm saying, but there's a lot of other little things in there. I'm saying it, I think he's kind of correct, but I don't want to give my full opinion on that yet.
A.J. Houston is very intelligent, y'all, but you know what? He has a certain naivety about him. He just thinks, you know what, Kerry, the world is a good place. You just got to find the good in. That's A.J. Houston, y'all. And he doesn't think anything.
No, Kerry, I am truly an eternal optimist. I'm truly an eternal optimist with, I guess, what they call it, a conspiracy syndrome.
Okay. Yeah,
I really like conspiracy theories, and there ain't nothing wrong with conspiracy theories. But you know, you have to really, you know, analyze. You know, they theorize everything. And everything not a conspiracy. You know,
some things not right wrong.
Well, if they declassify it and tell you that it's really happening, I mean, how do you call it a conspiracy theory? They telling you they building underground bunkers. So what do you think the underground bunkers are for? What was that movie, y'all, when they were building the spaceship to take the people away, the rich people away, and everybody else, they were kind of leaving as the earth was just crumbling underneath them? What was that movie?
There's been a lot of those.
Okay. I forgot the name
of
the movie, but...
Of
rich people were getting on this big old thing, this big old ship that they built or space. I don't know what that thing was. But the earth was just crumbling. And I mean, everywhere, cars were just going in these great big sinkholes. And all these rich people were just trying to make their way to this ship because they knew the ship has been built to sustain itself during whatever was about to happen. And that said, that was like a wake-up call. And so when I heard them talking about building bunkers, I don't know what y'all think that means, but to me that sounds like that movie.
Well, yeah, you know what? Has anybody heard of Virgin Aeronautics?
No, what's that?
Virgin Aeronautics, they won the government. There was a contest in terms of a manned plane that would actually fly to near outer space and then into outer space. And we're not talking about the space shuttle. So they've already completed tests that have gotten a plane that has been able to do that. And they are charging, it's like $500,000 to $1 million per person for a flight into outer space. So if they already have that capability, at some point, if they perceive that there's going to be some kind of onslaught or nuclear devastation, somebody plans on getting on the plane and not necessarily being in a bunker and going to a space station. And it's not too far-fetched. They're not in those space stations and creating this just for research. People are gambling that something deviously may happen in the future, and when and if it does in their mind, the rich are going to be able to be someplace where they won't have to deal with it.
Okay, so someone on this panel,
y'all want to
understand
one thing.
Tell me one thing. Okay, Nixon. Now, Reagan spent all these billions of dollars on the Star Wars project. And when it was finished, nobody ever said anything else about the Star Wars project. So what was it?
How do you know it doesn't still exist?
No, that's what I'm saying. It does exist. I'm saying when it was finished, nobody said anything else about it. See, to
what project was that?
The Star Wars project. To me, Star Wars, because when, you know, a couple of years after it was done, we had the little three hurricanes in Florida. And then we had a couple go up the East Coast. And then we had, that was a couple of years before Katrina and all these other things. So, me, I was thinking it was some type of weather control thing or something. I'm not sure if there's been so many things happening about the weather.
Somebody's coming up. I'm not sure who it is.
Well, I wanted to say something a while ago on another topic, but since you said that, let me say something on this here. What you just said about the Nixon Star Wars and I'll try to get to it. It's like now, carrying on, we all talking about a gridlock. Just added, right? Yeah. 2 weeks ago, it was occurring 2 weeks ago. Well, you know, they wanted to wait. There's like 150 companies that were going to participate in the gridlock.
There's noise in their background. Who is that?
I think it's that's Christopher or AJ.
AJ, is that you?
No, that's not me.
That was me. I knew it.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Say what?
Now, he said something just a while ago about Star Wars. What did you say? Restate what you said about Star Wars. You said something about Star Wars that put me on my topic.
Okay, AJ, what did you say about Star Wars?
I don't know. What I said is a couple years, you know, after the Star Wars project was finished, nothing was ever said about it again. But when we started having all these adverse weather conditions, when we had three or four hurricanes that hit the coast of Florida, then we had a couple go up the East Coast, and all this was before all the hurricanes came to the Gulf of Texas and Katrina and the one that hit the lower part of Texas that was real bad. But it was like there was a disturbance in a certain area where all these hurricanes came in. It come from the same place. So I'm saying that was out of character for our weather, for everything that's happened in years past. So I was wondering if the Star Wars project had anything to do with attempting to control the weather. Because, you know, in wartime, if you can control the weather over somebody's territory, you got them. That's, you know, you're the man.
So I'm wondering now, this gridlock we were supposed to discuss a few weeks ago, whether or not, you know, if this power outage, which I have never experienced for three days, a time it's supposed to be out where I'm located at here in Dallas, And I had to move to another location this evening to stay 2 or 3 days. Some in-laws. Well, you know, the gridlock, they wanted to be the of the bad situation to see how people are going to act or respond to emergency situation and how they could survive at the same time, like as if it was a 911 incident or Hurricane Katrina or Star Wars project or whatever. And so you have like 150 for what Kerry sent me on that website when I read it a few weeks ago. There's going to be like 150, 155 companies, electrical companies, that are going to participate in that gridlock outage. And so I noticed down the street, some of my relatives, about 3 or 4 complexes down the street, they had power. And up the street here, the power was out, and all in the hometown, the whole city, the hometown I come from. You know, most of the city was out. And so, and a lot of Dallas is out, you know, but certain areas like where I'm at now is in, you know, they're still on. And so I wonder, by that gridlock supposed to be taking place a few weeks ago, but the situations weren't adverse enough, you know, the conditions weren't adverse enough for them to complete their project or do their assessment of that project if they wanted to laboratory. Hey, so
and you know, I didn't even put the two together, but you are absolutely right. You know, the information I sent you guys on the blackout, you know, you wonder, I mean, because this thing is like across the country. You know, I'm in Dallas, and utilities here were out for like, I mean, from like 8:30 to 5 o'clock at my house, so Khufu's may be back on. I don't know. But, you know, you just wonder. I mean, because I haven't ever been in one myself, Khufu, where, you know, utilities were out for, you know, any amount of time other than like 30 to 40 minutes, you know, to an hour. So you wonder if they're connected. But I say to anybody who's wondering, this is the time that you need to we looked at our situation today and realized we assessed what that means we need to do. So that says generator, that says extra food, that says extra water, just in case, you know, blankets and things like that, just in case it happens again, which I believe it will happen again. I mean, because
That's correct. It's like fireplaces. You have some places that have, like my place have a fireplace. I'm sister heating air. Well, I was prepared. With firewood to stay at the house, you know, and so then you have some place to have gas. Well, mm-hmm. my home has gas, and so even though I didn't have a fireplace, I had gas. I could have been still functioning, and you know, inside the you know the home. But like I say, they call that grid X2, or what they call that, Kerry, that you were saying, you know, that we was so been talking about a few weeks ago.
Grid X2.
Yes, and people need to read that because it kind of coincides with what's going on right now. Trying to see whether or not people can survive a situation like a very bad situation like Hurricane Katrina. You know, America's supposed to be the luxury country of the world, whatnot, so people are laid back and people are comfortable in their situation. But if there was to be a major crisis, a world crisis or a national crisis, not just in one place like in Newark, New Jersey, you know, so Hurricane Katrina, or these type of places here. But how about the whole nation in itself? How would people respond? And how would people be prepared to deal with that situation? So that's what grid X is about. And I think we're in kind of one of those situations right now because a lot of places, most of the places in the country, a lot of places are experiencing the allergies. And people are scamming, you know, trying to make sure they got enough wood or they have gas or, you know, any type of things here, you know, trying to deal with the crisis.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, we got 3 topics I want to hit on before, and we're down to our last 13 minutes of the show, and I got 3 topics I still want to hit on. Okay, one, the thief that stole the radioactive material in Mexico. I question that one, y'all. Just letting y'all know, just so when something pops up and they tell you that radioactive material is spread out all over a certain area, I just question this person who was crazy enough to steal the truck, or did he really steal the truck at all? That's one thing I want to touch on. I also want to touch on the fact that India India is currently assigning a number to every person in India. Every person in India is being assigned a number. Now, I thought we all had Social Security numbers, but, you know, I don't know what the situation is in India, but India is currently assigning every citizen a number. And guess who's funding this? The CIA. Okay, y'all, just putting it out there. And last but not least, I want to talk about the guy who wrote the Patriot Act. You know, the Patriot Act we got under George Bush. That was after 9/11. You know, for anybody who's not, you know, up to speed. After 9/11, they told us that, you know, the terrorists were talking on the phone line, so, you know, we should let them tap our phones so that they could catch the terrorists planning all these terrorist threats, or, you know, or all these things that they were going to be doing on the phone. So we naively agreed to that, and that was the Patriot Act. You know, so then they began to wiretap all of our phones, which we are all terrorists. But anyway, saying all that to say that the guy who wrote the Patriot Act came out recently and said this, y'all. He said he can't even believe that the NSA is doing all that they're doing. He said they are out of control. Now, go figure. The guy who wrote the Patriot Act is now saying that the NSA is out of control. So those are some of the things I just wanted to touch on, y'all. I just found all that crazy. But, you know, I just want to start first with the guy who stole the truck or the woman who stole the truck, whoever stole the truck. I question the truck was really stolen with radio.
Okay, you said we got 13 minutes, and so we're going to deal with these three topics in 13 minutes, okay? Correct?
That's what we're going to do.
Okay, so topic number one is about the radioactive material.
That was stolen. A thief allegedly stole a truck that contained radioactive material.
Okay, I can't tell us based on that subject. I haven't read on that subject, but I listen to y'all, and then the next two subjects I'd like to comment on.
Okay, AJ and Christopher, you know, you can just chime on the fact, does it sound logical? I mean, you know, typically a truck that has radioactive material is going to be labeled hazardous material aboard. Be careful. Watch yourself. You know, I don't know how they do it in Mexico. This happened in Mexico. So I don't know how they do it in Mexico. But, you know, here in America, if there's a truck containing some hazardous material, isn't there typically some type of information on that truck stating that that material is hazardous?
If they're trying to get rid of it legally, yeah.
It has hazmat assigned to it. And a play card when you have a CDL Class A license. And so if the only way you can carry hazmat is if you have hazmat on your CDL. Now, because they have a play card with it. Now, if it does not have a play card, then if you have a CDL Class A, you can't transport that hazmat material. But something like what you're talking about, it may or may not be as serious as what they are putting out there to be. Like the next two topics we're going to talk about, you said in 13 minutes. So if it does not have a play card, the thing is
that is true, but you know the material that was stolen was actually from a hospital in Mexico. So it was radioactive material that they use as a tracer for cancer. So the reason that they're concerned is that they are thinking that it was stolen to make a dirty bomb because it was to be disposed of, but it never reached its destination because it was hijacked. So, yeah, it is suspicious, but actually it's not that hard to steal radioactive material.
Really?
Because it's used in industry, it's used in pharmaceutical, and it's also used – but you got to keep in mind, this is Mexico. It's not the United States.
Okay.
So if somebody was going to try to hijack it, you'd probably want to go to some place where there was less heightened security and not as difficult to get it. So that's what the fear is that somebody's going to put it in a bomb and detonate it.
That's what the rule going to change it. Whether it's in America, because if it did not have a play card with it, then anyone who has a CDL Class A license can transport that material. Now, if it has a play card on that hazard material, it's going to be labeled play card, and if you don't have a hazard endorsement on your CDL Class A license, then you cannot transport that.
But the thing is, we're looking at all the rules based on the rules that we use in America, being in Mexico, it may not have been labeled. Yep. It could be a whole lot of things. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that we don't know. So
it was labeled, had the placards all on it, say what hospital it came from and what was in it and how much was in it. But it's in Mexico.
Wow.
And like AJ is saying, the same does not apply in terms of security, transporting, and all those other things. So it's the ideal place to steal something.
So y'all said they stole it in Mexico or they stole it in America?
In Tijuana.
Oh, in Mexico.
So it's Mexico.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the problem with Mexico is, you know, I'm going to venture to say this. I would hate to think that you could give someone a bribe and bring it on across the border. Just saying, you know. But anyway, just putting it out there like that. And so let's just say we don't be surprised if that radioactive material finds its way over here and the dirty bomb is, you know, used on us.
Yeah, Mexico rules are messed up anyway. You know, we all know that. Mexico rules and laws. They really need a real democratic government, you know. And then I don't think everybody needs the American way. I don't say everybody needs to go the American way. Of course, we are culturized and indoctrinated with American values and principles and ways of life. And we think as though, you know, it's hard to make a change, right? So we don't have them people think about how they live and do things over in that country. But something like that there. We probably need the American way on that.
I agree. Okay, yeah, we're going to move on because, you know, we're down to the last 5 minutes. But we're going to go over just a little bit. But, yeah, you know, India assigning a number to every citizen and the CIA, you know, basically bankrolling that. Why would that be necessary? And why would the CIA be involved with that?
Anybody? Well, I don't know. It could be one of the largest populated areas of populated countries to try and see if it worked. Could be a test.
Okay, be a test for what?
Test for us.
Okay, for what?
So you saying?
They're forcing. It's like a form of like a Social Security number, but it's not a Social Security number. But the Indian government is basically trying to say, under the guise of we really care about our citizens. We want to make sure that they're registered for the different welfare services and all these things. So they want to try and take all 1.4 billion folks and register them on a database. They're saying they're using for biometric data.
Okay,
yeah.
Once you get the numbers, you know, it don't matter what the test is for. You're just trying to make sure you can get the numbers and get the people. And I think it can be run the gambit on a lot of countries and a lot of places.
But is that the mark of the beast that everybody have a number or you can't buy or sell?
Well, it could be the mark of the beast. It could be that 666 that we read in Unseen Hand, the 666 Illuminati. It could be that New World Order, this type of stuff here. But, you know, it could be that the American democracy has extended to India, and these people don't have a system where they can keep track of their citizens. Like we have a Social Security number here in America. You know, there's a lot of, you know, conspiracy theory can come in. There's a lot of stuff can come into play in a lot of debatable situations, you know. But all in all, we have to look at it a little bit closer and deeper to see actually where India is going with this. That could be
happening in India, but the CIA is funding it. Why is the CIA, which is technically going to boil down to our tax dollars, so why is our tax dollars funding this?
Well, you're right. It's supposed to take 5 years and approximately $250 million. Well, but. I think the CIA is involved in it for, it sounds like a criminal flavor. They said that as this is going on, and definitely after it's completed, that you can expect for a steep increase in human rights arrests. That's what they're saying, especially like among the poor and the rural areas in India. That's what they're alleging.
Ow. See, I don't know. If y'all don't see something suspicious about that, I do.
If the CIA is involved in America, and we know how we work in America, we all especially African America, we know how things operate. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know how things operate in America, and we know how influential American politics and American ways of life are around the country, you know, around the world. And so the CIA involved, and we're talking about the same type of acculturation or indoctrination or whatever that we have going on right here in America. And we don't want to call it, we don't call it indoctrination, but we have been acculturated African American to this American way of life. And we have helped create this American way of life. We through struggle and protest and this type of stuff. We're citizens, and so the American way of life is our way of life. It is not, you know, the white person way of life. We have contributed to the American society and the way of the American rules and regulations and thoughts processes. And so if India is assigned a number to their citizens and whatnot, then it's more like going to be something similar to what we have helped create right here in America.
But Kerry,
okay,
Kerry, one thing I wanted to say that see every country knows that America, like in Israel and all these other countries, where America gives them billions of dollars a year to do whatever. So every country knows America helps other countries that need help, or helps other countries that they like, whichever way it goes. So to let them come in and devise whatever number system could be the strength of them saying that, okay, we're going to come in and we're going to help you per capita, per whatever. And it could just be a test. So that's why I'm saying it's a test to see if somebody else will fall for it, somebody else will go for it. So it could be a lot of different reasons that it's done, but that would be the main reason any country would let them do it, is because America gives billions of dollars to all these different countries, Iraq, Afghanistan, Germany, you know, Israel. I'm saying all these countries, America gives billions, you know, billions of dollars to a year to help the economy.
Okay. Okay, now, y'all, we're going to have this last topic before we get out of here. The Patriot Act author met with the EU Parliament to say that the NSA is out of control. So why would Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner say that? Why would the architect of the Patriot Act make a comment like that? And he was criticizing the NSA domestic spying. So when someone who writes a law that turned out to be so bad for the American people as the Patriot Act did turns around and says that the NSA is out of control, should we be afraid?
Well, Kerry, one thing first is all the information that's coming out on the Republican side, all these things that they thought they wouldn't come out on their side. So a lot of times when it involves you, or when it details stories that you didn't want to come out, it's bad. But when it involves somebody else, it's all right.
Wow. I don't know. Christopher, Kufo, what do you think? Did I lose you? Did I lose communication with y'all? Okay,
no.
Phone line back.
No, I'm still here.
Okay, say what, Christopher? Okay, I think we're having phone problems. AJ, Kufo.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I think we're having phone problems. Can I hear you, Kufo? Can I hear you, Christopher?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, there you go. Okay, so what do you think? When the author of the Patriot Act comes out and says that the NSA is out of control, should we all be afraid? Okay, we are experiencing phone line problems, y'all. Okay, well, we quit. we surrendered to the weather. We don't know what's going on, but we're going to surrender to the weather. We crossed over our 10 o'clock mark anyway. Listen, I'd like to say thank you to the guys tonight. I always enjoy hanging out with them. Y'all, they are so smart. Listen, I always feel like I'm smarter for just being friends with these guys. So thank you tonight to Kufo, M.G. Kush.
Now, let me address that issue. I'm sorry. The last topic was what now? Who did with what?
We were talking about the author of the Patriot Act also saying that he... Hopefully you're in and out. We were saying that the author of the Patriot Act felt that the NSA was out of control, the National Security Agency.
let me address that. Let me, you know, defend the President of the United States, Barack Obama, last night on MSNBC with Chris Matthews. He gave a press interview live at 6 o'clock here in Texas, you know, 7 o'clock in Washington, D.C., before a crowd of college students and whatnot who are going to be future Democrats and Republicans and doctors and lawyers and this type of stuff. Okay, now, President Obama said something about that. He said something about the NRA. What do you call it? No, not NRA. It's
National Security Agency, NSA.
NSA, okay, yeah, for the NRA with NSA. Okay, the president said that you know, to the nation, I don't know if y'all heard the interview last night, that the NSA is not there to actually key in on every conversation and every text message that's coming down of the American people. Although he had institutional changes because of what he'd been hearing in the media, in polling, concerns, and this report, what's the guy's name come out with the conspiracy thing about, you know, and the guy hiring out in Russia and whatnot, leaks and stuff like this here. He said, man, that they don't have time to key in on every conversation, every text message every American person have. The only concern with the threats of America.
If that's the case, then why don't they only do that when they have suspicion to believe versus just basically randomly listening? And I think the author of the Patriot Act, what he was essentially saying is that it's going to get to the point where there's going to be such a widespread type of surveillance. It's kind of like police when they have what's called prosecutorial immunity. That's good that they have it, but then what happens when they actually use the guise of that to then spy on somebody or do something against someone that they really didn't have any reason to suspect them in the first place? So I think it's good, but it's a fine line. And I think when you give someone that cloak of invisibility, then what you're going to have is a harder way that when they actually do cross the line and now they're in the misconduct and things that they shouldn't be doing under the guise, you're not going to be able to prosecute them.
That's why he outlined that the program has been critiqued and that some changes due to intellectual thought for American people and whatnot. Input, you know, you have to have them, you know, the government is the people. That's basically what he was talking about. And so in order to keep things in order and checks and balances, we have to listen to the people, you know, and see where there's, you know, no one party or one person can have the complete answer to a situation. But the overall goal is to protect the American people from terrorist attack. Yes, and we have terrorist cells in America, people who are looking to destroy America because they envy America's way of life, envy America's way of freedom, these type of things here, and democracy.
Every American is a potential terrorist?
No, but we do have.
But if you wiretap everybody's phone, that's what you're saying.
But he said that they're not solely interested in your Texas.
If we give them the benefit of the doubt of that, my issue becomes this. If you don't have to get any kind of formal warrant to tap my phone or to put wires or to do any of that, and you can purely go in my house and do that based on suspicion, I got a problem with that. If you think I'm a terrorist as an individual or an organization that I belong to, go get a court order and then do what you got to do. What they're trying to say is they want to have a general liberal blanket that if they suspect, they don't have to go get a court order from a judge. And
that's
kind of crazy.
You know, that's a legitimate concern that you and I should have. But the overall, you know, the big picture is that people, you know, if we get too relaxed and saying that, okay, since the American people are saying that we are checking every phone record and messages, but we know ourselves that we're not interested in just standards that's of non-essential. You know what I'm saying? Although we're looking at it, it's a non-essential. Our whole goal and picture, the main agenda is to protect America from extreme terrorists that we have people sales. We have sales in the world now, and they're in America.
And I agree with that, but you can't give them the blanket unconstitutional law to be able to do that. I mean, if you think that I did something wrong, investigate me. But you have to go through the same parameter for poor Chris Bonds that you do with rich Mr. Man over here. All I'm saying is that I totally agree with you. I've been in the military 26 years, and I know we've all been in the military, but if you suspect something,
I think you have to
get more than just a suspicion and then be able to act on it. That's what I'm saying.
How would I investigate you if I'm not suspicious of you, if I can listen to the conversation? But now,
I think you need to go get a court order. I don't think, because to me, if you can arbitrarily, who's to say that person who's basically not, didn't have to go get any kind of court order to be able to do those things to me, who's to say they're right? So to me, you're trying to skirt around not being sued or not being this or that by going to go get a court order. I don't believe in an open-ended power.
That's why the American people input and their voice of concern are legitimate, you know, for as creating a critique of the system and creating a new oversight and make some changes. You know what I'm saying? Something maybe overtly that we look at in order, you know, to change as well to where the American people feel comfortable with us doing review or this look at their luggage.
That's true, but J. Edgar Hoover, he didn't get no court order when he was wiretapping Martin Luther King, Malcolm X's phone. He just suspiciously did it, and they were considered terrorists and communists. So I just don't buy that. And that is the reason that the NSA does not want to have to, on an individual basis, go get a court order for an individual or an organization. That is why we have problems in our community with police who have prosecutorial immunity. Because then when even they do something wrong and you take them to court, that guys allows them not to be prosecuted. I'll never buy into that. That's just my opinion.
Because the overall picture is that they're looking out for the best interest of the American people in some instances. You know what I'm saying? Not all instances. You know what I'm saying? You have to evaluate case-by-case basis.
Well, why not have to go get a court order? Do you want now a police state or marshal state? The police could just come kick your door in and say, I think you this and I think you hiding something there. I mean, to me, it's the same difference. If you think that much of me in terms of suspicion, go get a court order. You can't just have a police state or marshal state and come kick my door. I'm not buying that.
I want to say this. When did it become to the point that they could go and basically go around the law, not get warrants, and basically they're basically presuming you're guilty until you're found innocent, as opposed to you're innocent until you're found guilty. So
That's what I'm saying. It gives the federal government liberality to listen wiretap on anybody. And so listen to the dialogue, you will notice that they don't say only in cases that we suspect somebody. So they're randomly listening to everything. And I know they're not listening to every little thing in terms of personal conversation, but on cell phone, on house phone, on computer the communication, what I'm telling you is that they can pick and choose without having to get a court order. And it's easy to sit here and say that now, but if they do that to you, and then they try to turn around and use something against you, and they didn't have a court order, I guarantee you'll have a problem with it then.
I agree. Before we get out of here, you were saying what?
I would have been trying to say something for the longest.
Go ahead.
What I was saying is, I understand, but when you look at the Timothy McVeigh situation, you look at all the schools that had the shootings, and you look at the public shootings in different mall parts and all these other things, there are ways to stop those things from happening. So there has to be a fine balance. And I understand that rights are violated, but I don't know exactly what they can do with the information that they have if it's not a national situation, it's not a terrorist situation. I don't think it goes to you just being arrested for having marijuana or anything like that. I really don't think that's the case. So
it's not for us, y'all.
No, wait a minute. I think we can look at it finally and see what cases string over to be something that's not a national security violation.
But with that law, if you get someone who's pushed, they can then claim that they had to do it based on the consideration for national security.
I think it's just too fine of a line,
and it's too much liberal power to give to anyone, and then you have to fully trust that they're going to do what's in the best interest. And I'm sorry, from my five-fold, I ain't seen that.
That's the 4 acres and the mule theory to me. That you don't have any historical data to base their findings on, that they'd use this information for anything else. I'm not saying it's legal. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be done, but I'm saying there are cases that it should be to stop these heinous situations from occurring. So I'm saying let's go here.
Timothy McVeigh was CIA. So a lot of these people, so was the Boston Bomber. So, you know, when we get through, you know, we're basically, you know, we're using the wrong examples. I mean, it sounds good. But in reality, these are people that were already working with the government. So when you
he was in the military, Gary. He was in the military, and he thought the American government was really, when he went to Kuwait or whatever place he went to his military career, he thought that the American government was actually oppressing those other people. And so he decided to rise up against the American government to help, you know, terrorize the situation.
Even in theater, when we are listening in and there's capabilities going on, it's usually based on a suspected enemy, not just randomly open mic listening to everybody's conversation. I think you have to have a reasonable belief to believe. And if that's the case and you believe that Christopher Bonds is, then get a court order, because that could be on the flip side, as we say, to protect the interests of public safety and to stave off terrorism. Then if that's the case, then what happens when they don't think Christopher Bonds is a terrorist, but they just think that he is in enmity against some of the corrupt things they're doing in the government, and then they invoke national security and they arrest him?
Let me be frank with you.
But I got to remember, when we start giving up our rights, I mean, and all of us are intelligent enough to know where that leads to. And so we're in a dangerous place right now in this country where we're giving up a little here and a little there, and the next thing you know, we are right back in slavery again. I mean, that's where we're headed.
Let me be frank with you about something, y'all. Let me be very frank with y'all about something. Okay. Those laws are not for African Americans. Because we're not those type of people. Let me tell you something. Now, even though anybody listening to our conversation, whatnot, we may have a few guys that come out like the guy did who shot up the military facility in Washington, wherever he was at, and Virginia, wherever, you know, the guy who was tall with the bald head, the brother, and he shot up and, you know, shot people up, whatnot. We may have a few spirit incidents like that. But for a terrorist sale, the African American is not a terrorist. The community is not a terrorist. So we don't have to worry about them listening to our conversation, because that's for white Americans. Those people robbed with the government and whatnot, those white American people, the white guys who have somewhere figured their mind, something wrong with their government, they, you know, went over there and something happened. But then again, you have Pakistanians, and we have people from other countries here who study Islamic religion, who are extremists, who specifically came to America to terrorize America. But we must remain vigilant.
I'm going to jump in here just to get out of here, but that's not true. And I say that let me tell you why I say that's not true. They did it to Martin Luther King. They did it to Malcolm X. So when you say they don't listen to our phone calls, that's just not true.
And then if that's the case, make the verbiage in the Patriot Act, or what the NSA is trying to do, only for those individuals. See, they're not willing to do that. And so, I mean, I don't buy that, because if they're not, then why should they have the right to do that then if it's not in the black community? Then take the black community out of it, but they're not going to put that specific verbiage.
Everyday Hoover, and we all saw on that video that Carrie showed us of that lady, whatever her name was, Mrs. Sunset, those people there, they were dangerous.
The state of Illinois government said that Christopher Bonds was a threat to society, so much so that he should be locked up for 28 years. I'm sorry, I can't buy that, because I'm looking at approaching $400,000 because of not necessarily the Patriot Act, but something that's similar called prosecutorial immunity, because it gives too much liberality. Now, if it had been legitimate, I believe I would be in jail right now. So I can't buy into that, because I've seen what, and I'm not saying there shouldn't be a degree of liberality, but it should only be when you still have to follow the law. Because those same folks who saying with the NSA and the Patriot Act, let us do this and let us do that, they're not talking about for themselves. They're not talking about for their rich constituents. They're talking about all the other folks. So if you want to target possible terrorists, whether they're foreign or domestic, you have to go through the legal proceedings to get what you need. And what's the issue going to a judge saying, I think this individual over here, I think this organization over here is suspected, we need you to sign this court order so we can tap, so we can do wiretap or do whatever. I just don't buy all that other stuff, because to me...
Am I talking to AJ or am I talking to Christopher right now?
That's Christopher.
Okay. Now, what I'm saying is that what you're talking about is some legitimate concerns. The system is not perfect, but that's why we have to have American people input in order to correct some of it. Everything ain't going to be perfect after we get to correcting some things.
The same people who are asking for this, they will – see, if this is perpetuating. They're asking for something that they wouldn't even want on themselves, because they would sue you. See, they would sue you if you dare try to tap their wire because you thought they were a terrorist. But it's okay to do it to the American people. But if I'm a congressman or senator, you better not, because I'll sue you to the hilt. So I don't buy that, because the people who perpetuate and who propose this, they don't even want the thing on their own selves, on their own agenda.
Well, now, that's where the problem come in, because of the fact that I think that senators senators and congressmen need to be drug tested.
Well,
I mean,
they drug test me randomly.
He was the one who signed. He's the one who promoted law to drug test welfare participants, and he used drugs himself. You know,
but
I mean,
most of the American people,
the
when
military,
they did a poll, also agreed that anybody who gets public assistance should be. But nobody said, well, now they're starting to say that congressmen, senators, representatives, mayor, anybody who goes for a public office that's state or federal employee, they should be drug tested and randomly drug tested. But don't nobody want to touch that.
That's what we need. And so, you know, as we get more into this political thing ourselves, you know, there's something we have to create, you know, in order to get further into this process, what, you know, what we're doing beyond the radio show, because, you know, we have a voice also, you know, and that we need to extend our voice beyond the radio show, you know, because these people here, they are, yeah, you got people like Ted Cruz. He has too much voice in Texas. People like Sherrod Palin, you know what I'm saying? I mean, then we have, what's her name, Michelle Bachmann, who they are now calling the queen of distortion. You know, O'Reilly, we have Sam Hannity. You know, we have all these type of people that's really messed up. You know what I'm saying? Rush Limbaugh. You know what I'm saying? We have to rise up against these type of people. You know what I'm saying? We need a bigger voice than what we have right now.
Obviously, the noose has not been tightened around the neck long enough for black folks to realize we got to get up and do more. I mean, because the thing is, when we start letting them roll back these rights like the Constitution, and when they say, well, we don't really need that and this needs to be omitted and da-da-da, and when we keep doing that, when you keep on, the Constitution ain't the Constitution no more. And what we're going to be looking at is slavery all over again. I mean, that's just where we're headed, y'all. I mean, I heard them say something about, I think it's Rand Paul just wrote a bill that said he's going to require that all the lawmakers understand and write these laws as opposed to signing them into law, because a lot of them don't even know what's in it. One of the lawmakers, and I forgot her name, actually said, why don't we just go ahead and pass the laws and then we'll see what's in them. That's scary.
Ron ignorant. Paul, if he said that, that's the first thing he done said in a long time that makes sense, because most of his views and thoughts are pretty crazy.
Yeah. But that's right on point. I mean, that is absolutely
on point. He's a logical man. He ain't a logical man in Congress or the Senate.
Well, he said that. He said that, and he is on point with that, and that is absolutely true. I mean, there's too much going on that they're not looking into before they pass these laws, and then they come back and say, oh, well, we didn't know that was in there. That's too late. And so I think that's just something we gotta you know, ask, and we gotta demand that. We gotta actually demand
maybe
that.
Maybe you said it. Maybe go ahead.
We gotta get out of here. Okay, wrap it up, and then we're gonna get out of here. Go ahead, Kusum.
Maybe he figured out that he the same type of person that he was talking about, because they consider him just like Rick Perry. They consider him as Herman Cain. You know what I mean? Paul Ryan, you got Rand Paul and the Paul Ryan. Yeah. They both, you know, Rand Paul, his view just messed up as Paul Ryan. You know, Paul Ryan view just messed up as Rand Paul, the one you spoke of a while ago. You know, and Paul Ryan was the one who ran for vice president with Mitt Romney. So these people here, they are way to the right. Go ahead, Carrie. We're going to end the show. I know that.
We're going to close out. Listen, y'all, I always enjoy hanging out with y'all. I just want y'all to know that y'all are three of the smartest black men I know, and I really enjoy hanging out with y'all some Friday nights. I really do. Y'all, listen, we have enjoyed tonight. We have talked about a little of everything. We just kicked back tonight. We took our shoes off, and we just, you know, talked about the things that we thought was in the news worth mentioning. So, listen, we're going to do this again each and every Friday night. Join us here. Center Stage, 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern, right here, Center Stage. That's where we'll be. Again, I'd like to say thank you to my guests, A.J. Houston, Major Christopher Buns, Khufu Kush, also known as Carl Mitchell. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with me tonight. Also, thank you to the audience for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.